Okay, right now I'm talking to you from the town square in Banská Bystrica in central Slovakia. That's where I'm talking to you from. And I'm using the Freetown Wi-Fi system, and I'm expecting it to cut out at some point. But
Oh, that's cool. That's okay.
we'll see how far it goes. So you're based in Ghana, right?
Yes, I'm in Ghana.
Okay, super. And you're interested in the topic of motivation, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so what's your interest in motivation? Why is this important for you?
Yeah, it is so important to me because you know, we all at a point in time of our lives need some encouragement, sort of. We need some body to push us. You need, and then you need to push someone to. That's how the world is, you know. It's like give and take, sort of. You never know who will be listening. You never know who would need what you would be saying. And sometimes people are on the verge of giving up. But one word from you, one word of motivation, of course, from you, pushes the person to do what he or she's supposed to do. That's why I'm so much concerned about motivation.
Yeah, I like that idea. I like the idea of the fact that some people at some point in time they're going to help you in your life, maybe solve a problem or get to the next level, and then maybe you can return that favor to somebody else. Yeah, you have maybe at a different point in time in your life you're able to give back, and you do that as much as you can, right?
Exactly. I teach, and I'm very, very much in love with that. I was taught before I became a teacher, so I just want to give back what was given to me before. So I'm teaching right now. That's the work I do, and it's
Oh wow. So you're in class right now. Is that
no, we are on break.
right? Oh, you're it's like you should be teaching your class, not talking to me,
Yeah, we
right?
are on break. That's how come I'm talking.
Okay.
No, but I'm a subject teacher, so when it's time for my subjects, I go to the class. But right now, I don't have any class.
Okay, so what's your subject? Well, I mean, what do you well, what's your main focus, or what age group do you teach? Tell me a bit more about the teaching.
Okay, I teach English language and religious and moral education, and I teach children between the ages of 11 and 15.
Wow. Is that an easy or a difficult age group for you? From
It's
11
not
to
that
16.
easy. Right? It depends. It depends because, you know, at that age, you are building on what somebody has done already. So if the foundation is not that good, then you would have to reconstruct it. And getting back to the foundation at that point, it's so hectic. But sometimes, you know, with the kind of love we have for the profession, we try our best to do, and others also are well built. So you just put it on it like that, and you are going. And you encounter both situations most of the times. There are people who are slow learners naturally, and others are fast learners. And you come into contact with all of them. But at the end of the day, you do what is expected of you, at least. Even if it's one child at a time that would understand what you are doing, you do it.
Oh yeah, it's I mean, it would be nice to be able to teach the whole world, but it doesn't work like that, right? You've got to do it one day at a time, one step at a time, one person at a time. You've got to
Yeah,
help, you
one
know.
topic at a time.
Yeah, subject at a time, exactly, right? You can't teach everything all at once. You know, there's a process, right? And you have to follow the process.
Exactly.
Oh
Otherwise,
well.
the whole thing is arranged like a syllable that you have to follow. Like I'm saying, fine, we have a procedure we follow, but there are others who are slow learners. And you would have to allocate special and more time for them. And there are people who are fast learners, which you would have to tax them more so that it will balance. And all of them will get along and fall within the process.
Oh yeah, there's something about learning how life works there, isn't there? I mean, in life, you're going to be surrounded by people who are better than you and people who are worse than you, people who are faster, people who are slower, and you have to learn to get along with everybody, right?
So,
can you tell me a little bit more about schools in Ghana? Because, you know, are they the same as schools in other places? Because I'm trying to imagine in my mind that this place where you work.
So over here, we start schooling at 4, and they would go to what we call the correctional nursery. And by age 6, they have to graduate to what we call basic school 1, BS1.
Okay.
And
okay.
It would take them 6 years to go through the basic school. From basic 1 to basic 6 would take 6 years. And then we have the junior high school, which takes 3 years. So by 12, they are in basic 6. By 13, they are starting junior high. And that one takes 3 years. And at the end of the third year, they take a certificate examination called BEC, Basic Education Certificate Examination. Before they go to senior high school, that one takes for 3 years. That one, they major in a subject or in a program they would want to do. So
Can I just check that? That's similar to what exists in other countries. It's like a primary, there's a nursery school and a primary school and a middle school and a secondary school. So it's
exactly.
Something similar, right?
Exactly. Very, very similar. Very, very similar. Mm-hmm. The same. Similar.
Okay. And how are people's language skills there? Because you said you teach English, right? So this, you know, because I know in some countries they promote English as a first language, in some countries as a second language. So how does it work where you are?
Okay. For where I am, it is different from those in the city. I am in a rural area here. Those in the city get chance and they get advantage over so many things. You know, being in a city, you get so much exposure. But in the rural area here where I am, the first language here is the mother tongue, which is Chi. And it's so predominant that they only speak English when they come to school. In the house, their parents don't often speak English with them. So unless they come to school and they are restricted or they are, forced to speak it, they mostly would speak their mother tongue, which is Chi.
Okay.
Things we do here to help them, like during English reading class or grammar class or reading and comprehension class or writing class, there are so many things that we do just to help boost their English knowledge. Other than that, the language they are used to is their mother tongue, which is Chi. And very few elite people are here. And so sometimes you would even have to go to their various houses after school to make sure they are doing their homework. You have to walk distance to make sure they come back to school the following week or the following day. I mean, you know, the rural areas here, it's recently that they started taking education serious. It wasn't even serious. So with language study, it's not easy. It isn't easy, but we are trying. We are doing the best that we can do.
Yeah. So how many students are in the school altogether?
Students? Well, the whole school or my class or from we have those from lower primary, upper primary, and then junior high. All together, we should be about 300 to 400, between 300 and 400.
Wow. And you're saying that some of the students, maybe they don't go to school every day, right? You have to check and control and make sure that they're there, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So when you say rural area, it's sort of like a little bit out in the countryside and maybe people have to travel a little bit to get to the school, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Not travel, walk. They walk their way here.
Oh, walk. Okay, that's cool. Mm-hmm. That's cool. Mm-hmm. So what are the ways that you motivate the kids in the school? Because, you know, motivation is our theme today. So what are the main ways that you think benefits the children in terms of motivation? How do you drive them forward? How do you keep them interested?
Yeah, sometimes you would have to invite people from other sectors of work to come and talk to them. And other times we take them on excursions. Sometimes too, we would have to organize games, sports, and other things for them. And we organize speech and prize giving days also, so that those that are trying to be punctual, trying to study hard, we reward them just to attract the others also to come on board. But those are some of the things that we do. And we draw some of them to as close to us as possible. We make them our friends. We take them like daughters, like sons. We talk to them like we would do to our children. And sometimes we have to buy books for them. We have to buy shoes for them. Sometimes you have to feed them. Yes.
So you have to feed them, did you say?
Yes, sometimes you have to feed them, mold to keep them. Because, like I'm saying, if the child is to walk like 40, 50 minutes before he or she comes to school, and the mother is only a farmer, or the father is just a farmer.
And, 40 or 50 minutes they have to walk to get to school, really?
Yes, that long. That is how rural this place is.
Wow.
Yeah. There are some villages that they have schools up to the primary. They don't have the junior high. So after primary over there, they have to walk to the nearby town to attend junior high. That is how come they walk that long, especially when they are a little bit older enough to walk that distance. So those are some of the things we do to motivate them.
Wow, that's super. So what kinds of, you mentioned sports, so what kinds of sports are popular where you are in the world?
Football, volley, and then athletics.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, I guess football is popular everywhere right now, yeah?
Definitely, it's popular everywhere.
Yeah, how does technology affect the education there? I mean, do you have the same technological facilities as other schools? Do you have computers and stuff? What's it like?
No, we don't. There was a program organized by RLG, and they were supplying schools with computers, but it's long way, like it stopped. And right now, a teacher would have to use his own or her own laptop to teach ICT. And the internet, we are far from it, please.
it must be expensive to buy a laptop there, is it?
Very, very.
Oh my gosh, I can imagine it. You probably need all the support that you can get in that part of the world. So what are the greatest challenges that you face as a teacher there? You know, what are the things you have to deal with regularly that are difficult?
Yeah, we don't get access to teaching learning material. Sometimes we would have to improvise. Most of the times we would have to improvise. Yeah, that is it. You know, when those things are there, they make the learning easier and fun, and it's become experiential. But you don't have what you use to explain yourself. Some things are abstract. You would need something concrete to let them know. And it sticks better when they see what you are teaching them. We don't have learning materials, teaching learning materials. No computers. We don't have no laboratory, like those things, those basic things that make learning and teaching fun, those things that make learning and teaching durable. We don't really have those ones, and it makes it kind of difficult. You always have to improvise. You would always have to improvise.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most underrated elements of a great teacher, is the fact that you can have a great plan, but the moment that the day starts, the moment you walk into the classroom, if the students are not in the right frame of mind, if they're not on board with what you do, it can be really difficult. And sometimes you have to change your plan. You have to improvise. You have to work, you know, where you are with what you've got. And and you can't really teach improvisation. You just have to kind of do it when you need to do it, right?
Exactly.
Wow, that's fantastic. So, I want to thank you very much for sharing the information today. You've created a very nice picture in my mind of what it's like to work in that part of the world. Wow. Do you
Thank
have a
you.
podcast?